Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. The gateway to the Amazon. We're at COP30, the UN climate summit. This is Democracy Now!
Secretary General, what message do you want this conference to send to Donald Trump?
We are waiting for you.
Do you see a possibility of him engaging in this process in a positive way?
Hope is the last thing that dies.
As UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres urges delegates to reach a deal at the UN climate summit, the current draft text does not include a roadmap to transition away from fossil fuels. We'll speak with one of the dissenting country's ministers, Vanuatu's Ralph Vigambanu, and with climate justice activist Harjit Singh, advisor to the Fossil Fuel Non-Proliferation Treaty. He's based in India, one of the countries that rejected moving away from fossil fuels, along with China, Saudi Arabia, and Russia. And thousands of Amazonian land defenders, both indigenous people and their allies, have traveled to Belém, Brazil, saying the rainforest is at a tipping point, but still can be saved. We'll speak with the leader of the indigenous resistance, Alessandra Corap Munduruku, part of the protest to shut down the COP30. She'll share her message with the world.
Vocês estão fazendo o quê com o meio ambiente?
What are you doing to the environment? What is your country doing to the environment?
Com o nosso povo, com o nosso rio.
You need to know. Because we here, we do not eat soy, we do not eat gold, we do not eat iron ore. We eat the fish and we eat the fruits from the forest. And we need our forest standing.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We're broadcasting from Belém, Brazil, at the UN Climate Summit. President Trump has accused six Democratic veterans in Congress of seditious behavior and said their actions are, quote, punishable by death, unquote. In a series of social media posts Thursday, Trump targeted the lawmakers after they released this video urging U.S. military personnel to defy illegal orders.
You can refuse illegal orders.
You can refuse illegal orders.
You must refuse illegal orders.
No one has to carry out orders that violate the law or our Constitution.
In one post, Trump wrote, quote, this is really bad and dangerous to our country. Their words cannot be allowed to stand. Seditious behavior from traitors. Lock them up, unquote. He also reposted a message that said, hang them, George Washington would, unquote. Democratic Senator Chris Murphy of Connecticut responded to Trump.
The president of the United States just called for members of Congress to be executed. If you are a person of influence in this country, maybe it's time to pick a f-ing side. If you are a Republican in Congress, if you are a Republican governor, maybe it's time to draw a line in the sand and say that under no circumstances should the president of the United States be calling on his political opposition to be hanged.
In related news, NBC News has revealed a top military lawyer at U.S. Southern Command raised concerns in August over the legality of U.S. blowing up boats in the Caribbean. A federal judge has declared the deployment of National Guard soldiers to Washington, D.C. illegal, ruling Trump lacks the authority to send troops into the district, quote, for the deterrence of crime, unquote. However, District Judge Giacob postponed enforcing her decision until December 11th to give the Trump administration time to appeal. In Chicago, federal prosecutors have abruptly dropped charges against a woman shot multiple times by a Border Patrol officer as she joined a convoy of vehicles trailing federal agents carrying out immigration raids. Prosecutors dismissed the case without explanation Thursday after defense lawyers presented evidence that the Border Patrol agent had swerved into Martinez's vehicle and later bragged in text messages about shooting her. Meanwhile, officials in Charlotte, North Carolina, say the U.S. Border Patrol has ended operations in North Carolina and will be heading to New Orleans to carry out mass immigration raids in Louisiana and Mississippi as soon as next week. White House border czar Tom Homan has told Fox News more federal immigration agents will soon be heading to New York City. The federal government's reportedly considering using a Coast Guard facility in Staten Island to jail detained people. In related news, The Guardian's revealed the FBI spied on New York immigration activists by gaining access to a Signal group chat used to monitor activity at three New York federal immigration courts. Meanwhile, New York City Mayor-elect Sohrab Mamdani is heading to the White House today to meet with President Trump, who threatened to cut off federal funding to New York if Mamdani was elected. Mamdani spoke on Thursday.
My team reached out to the White House to set up this meeting because I will work with anyone to make life more affordable for the more than 8.5 million people who call this city home. I have many disagreements with the president, and I believe that we should be relentless and pursue all avenues and all meetings that could make our city affordable for every single New Yorker.
Israel's army is carrying out a fresh wave of attacks across Gaza, despite the ceasefire deal that took effect over a month ago. Israeli airstrikes, tank and artillery fire were reported in the Barij and Maghazi camps and in the southern cities of Rafah and Khan Yunis, where Israeli forces shot and killed a displaced Palestinian. Meanwhile, Israel's military has repositioned its forces beyond the so-called yellow line in another violation of the ceasefire agreement. UNICEF reports at least 67 children have been killed by Israeli army fire in Gaza since the ceasefire came into effect October 10th. That's an average of 2 children killed per day since the beginning of the ceasefire. Israeli settlers have carried out another wave of attacks on Palestinian communities in the occupied West Bank, setting fire to properties in several villages. The attacks damaged tourist villas under construction south of Nablus and a plant nursery in the town of Deir Sharaf. Elsewhere, a group of Israeli settlers attacked Palestinian homes in a village near Hebron, assaulting residents with batons and stones. Separately, Israeli forces shot and killed 2 Palestinian teenagers during a raid on the Kafr Aqab neighborhood of occupied East Jerusalem. Meanwhile, a new report from Human Rights Watch finds the Israeli government's forced displacement of 32,000 Palestinians in 3 West Bank refugee camps in January and February amounts to war crimes and crimes against humanity. In London, police arrested at least 47 supporters of the banned direct action group Palestine Action as they held a peaceful protest outside the Ministry of Justice on Thursday. They're the latest of more than 2,000 arrests since Britain's House of Commons voted in July to proscribe Palestine Action under the UK's anti-terrorism laws, adding it to a list that includes ISIS and Al-Qaeda. Police dragged away protesters for simply carrying signs proclaiming, "I support Palestine Action."
Stop genocide in Palestine.
That's all right.
Call on the Keir Starmer to do the right thing. We want this Labour government to do the right thing.
This week, 6 members of Palestine Action went on trial on charges of aggravated burglary, criminal damage, and violent disorder after they broke into a factory that produces hardware for the Israeli weapons maker Elbit Systems and used sledgehammers to destroy equipment. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said Thursday he's ready to negotiate with President Trump on a U.S.-backed peace plan that calls on Ukraine to cede large swaths of territory to Russia while restricting the size of Ukrainian military. The 28-point peace plan was negotiated by Trump's envoy, Steve Witkoff, and Secretary of State Marco Rubio with Kremlin envoy Kirill Dmitriev, the head of Russia's sovereign wealth fund. The back-channel negotiations did not include any Ukrainian or European officials. The Trump administration's planning to open nearly 1.3 billion acres of U.S. waters off the coast of Alaska, California, and Florida to new oil and gas drilling. In a statement, Earth Justice blasted Thursday's announcement by Interior Secretary Doug Burgum, writing, quote, Trump's plan would risk the health and well-being of millions of people who live along our coasts. It would also devastate countless ocean ecosystems. This administration continues to put the oil industry above people, our shared environment, and the law, unquote. Here at the UN Climate Summit in Belém, Brazil, more than 30 countries have opposed the current draft text because it does not include a roadmap for phasing out fossil fuels. The negotiations were disrupted Thursday when a large fire broke out here at the conference site. 13 people were treated for smoke inhalation. Earlier on Thursday, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres urged delegates to reach a deal, also took questions from the press.
Secretary General, what message do you want this conference to send to Donald Trump?
We are waiting for you.
Do you see a possibility of him engaging in this process in a positive way?
Hope is the last thing that dies.
After the news conference, I attempted to follow up with the UN Secretary General. Secretary General, what message do you think Trump's not sending a high-level delegation? I mean, he gets in from Democracy Now.
What do you think about this innovative strategy by the presidency of two packages?
Can you respond to the huge fossil fuel delegation that's here, over 1,600 lobbyists? Should the U.S. ban the fossil fuel lobbyists?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. The Trump administration has altered the CDC's website to contradict the scientific conclusion that vaccines do not cause autism. The change appears to have been ordered by Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr., a longtime anti-vaccine activist, based on the debunked claims of disgraced ex-doctor Andrew Wakefield, who in 1998 published a paper in The Lancet suggesting the MMR vaccine causes autism. The paper was later retracted over ethical violations and falsified data. At least 24 follow-up studies involving thousands of children found no link between the MMR vaccine and the onset of autism. According to the CDC's own findings, measles vaccines have saved more than 94 million lives worldwide since 1974 and played a substantial role in reducing childhood mortality. In media news, Paramount, Netflix, and Comcast have formally submitted bids to buy Warner Brothers Discovery, the parent company of the Warner Brothers movie studio, as well as HBO and CNN. The Guardian reports the White House favors Paramount's bid. The paper reports Paramount's largest shareholder, Larry Ellison, has spoken to White House officials about possibly axing some CNN hosts disliked by President Trump, including Erin Burnett and Brianna Keeler. And the funeral for former Vice President Dick Cheney was held Thursday at Washington National Cathedral. Cheney was a key architect of the 2003 U.S. invasion of Iraq, but Iraq was not even mentioned during the funeral. Former President George W. Bush delivered the eulogy. President Trump and Vice President J.D. Vance were not invited to attend. Cheney, a lifelong Republican, had endorsed Kamala Harris in the 2024 race. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. Yes, this is Democracy Now!, broadcasting at the UN Climate Summit, COP30, here in the Brazilian city of Belém, the gateway to the Amazon. I'm Amy Goodman.
And I'm Nermeen Sheikh. Welcome to our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world. As negotiations draw to a close, nations are still sharply divided over the future of fossil fuels. Delegates representing dozens of countries have rejected a draft climate agreement that does not include a roadmap to transition away from fossil fuels. Over 30 nations from Africa, Asia, Latin America, the Pacific, the United Kingdom, as well as European Union member states have co-signed a letter opposing Brazil's draft proposals. The signatories include Mexico, Colombia, Guatemala, Sweden, France, Palau, and Vanuatu.
While petrostates, including Saudi Arabia and Russia, as well as some of the world's largest fossil fuel consumers, China and India, reportedly rejected the proposal to transition away from fossil fuels, the U.S. did not even send an official delegation here to COP30, with the Trump administration boycotting the climate talks. On Thursday, U.N. Secretary General Antonio Guterres took questions from the press. This was the BBC.
Secretary General, what message do you want this conference to send to Donald Trump?
We are waiting for you.
Do you see a possibility of him engaging in this process in a positive way?
Hope is the last thing that dies.
After the news conference, I attempted to follow up with UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres. Secretary General, what message do you think Trump's not sending a high-level delegation? I'm Amy Goodman from Democracy Now!
What do you think about this innovative strategy by the presidency of two packages?
Can you respond to the huge fossil fuel delegation that's here, over 1,600 lobbyists? Should the U.S. ban the fossil fuel lobbyists?
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Soon after U.N. Secretary General's news conference on Thursday, COP30 negotiations were abruptly disrupted when a large fire broke out here at the conference site, shutting down the venue for hours into the night. About 30,000 people were evacuated, 13 people treated for smoke inhalation. The fire is a metaphor for the state of the negotiations and the planet, as the UN warns nations have made very little progress in the fight against climate change, putting the world on track toward dangerous global warming as greenhouse gas emissions remain too high.
A recent annual emissions gap report suggested countries will not be able to prevent global warming from surpassing 1.5 degrees Celsius, which is the main goal of the Paris Agreement that was brokered a decade ago. Experts have said warming is likely to reach between 2.3 and 2.5 degrees Celsius, with the possibility of even higher temperatures if countries don't fulfill their current climate pledges.
For more, we're joined by Climate Minister Ralph Regenvanu from the Pacific Island nation of Vanuatu, one of the dissenting countries. Minister, we welcome you back to Democracy Now! We spoke to you when you were at The Hague just a few months ago. But if you can start off by talking about what just happened. You just came over to Democracy Now! After participating in a press conference. There is going to be the final draft coming out of this UN Climate Summit. But then there's also the Belém Declaration. Explain both.
So earlier this morning, we were informed by the presidency that there are about 80 countries who have put a red line on any mention of fossil fuels in the outcome from this meeting, this UNFCCC process, this COP. Any mention is a red line for them. But I just came from a press conference where over 80 countries announced they will be meeting in Colombia next year in April for the first ever conference of state parties on developing a roadmap to transition away from fossil fuels. So this is a voluntary initiative outside of the UNFCCC process, which Colombia's Minister of Environment announced. And as I said, we were joined by over 80 countries, and this is something we want to do in response to the lack of a roadmap coming out of Belém. We were expecting, based on President Lula's statement at the beginning of the COP, that there would be a roadmap. We were expecting that roadmap to come out, but it seems like it's not going to. But at least we have this other process that is now underway.
What happened?
We had over 80 states, we were informed by the presidency, who basically said we will not entertain any mention of fossil fuels in the outcome statement from the Belém COP. And I find that astounding, considering that we all know that fossil fuels contribute to 86% of emissions that are causing climate harm, that is endangering the future of our islands and all countries in the world. It's the future of humanity that's being endangered by fossil fuel production. We had the ICJ advisory opinion earlier this year clearly stating that all countries have a legal obligation to wind back fossil fuel production and take steps within their territories to transition away. We had the ICJ also said very clearly 1.5 degrees Celsius is the legal benchmark. And here at COP, we're seeing countries questioning and wanting to remove reference to 1.5. So it's really astounding the fact that we have scientific clarity. The IPCC has clearly given us all the guidelines we need. Now we have legal clarity from the world's highest court. And yet we don't see the political action coming from states who are members of the United Nations, members of the international order. And the fact that they are refusing to accept the best scientific evidence and legal obligations as defined by the world's highest court is quite astounding to countries that want to see real action.
Well, Minister Reginbardt, if you could explain, what were the countries that were most opposed to coming up with this roadmap to transition away from fossil fuels?
Well, clearly there's the Arab states led by Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is the most vocal in blocking and obstructing any progress. We also have the what they call the LMDC group, which is made up of high emitters as well from developing countries. We saw blockage also from the EU on adaptation finance, which is one of the big calls from the developing countries. We need more finance, as outlined in the Paris Agreement, for developing countries to be able to meet targets they set for themselves. So, but in terms of a fossil fuel roadmap, the big blockers were LMDC, Arab Group.
And Minister, if you could say more about climate finance. You've said in the past that climate finance is not charity. It's a legal and moral obligation grounded in responsibility and capacity as affirmed by Article 9.1 of the Paris Agreement.
Yes, I mean, the world has agreed in Paris that there is such a thing as climate finance from the developed high-emitting countries to be provided to the developing low-emitting countries to help them transition away. And what we're talking about is a just and orderly transition away from fossil fuels for countries that have fossil fuel already production, that they can move away from that. For countries that have not entered that pathway, they can also move out of that. So it's for everybody to participate. But certain countries don't have the finances we need, like Vanuatu. We are a very small country, just graduated from least developed country status. Our existing budgets are being halved by having to deal with climate crises, responding to extreme weather events. We need money to help us move.
Explain. Tell us about how climate change affects Vanuatu, the low-lying Pacific Island nations, the idea that some of these countries will disappear.
Yes, we have countries like Tuvalu and Kiribati, for example. They are coral atoll countries. Those countries, their land does not go higher than 2 meters above sea level. So already they're losing. They've lost entire islands. And according to the scientific consensus, they will lose the entire countries in the next 100 years. So these are states that will be gone from the map. Vanuatu is fortunate in that we are high islands, but we also are losing most of our low-lying areas where a lot of agriculture is, a lot of people live. So for us, we are independent, politically independent states. We have decided on how we want to develop our countries, but we cannot. Our futures are being curtailed by the conduct of other large states who don't seem to care whether we have human rights equivalent to them. And basically, through their actions, curtailing our futures, and especially for our younger generations.
And if you could go back, let's go back to the question of climate finance, which is what is essential to prevent what you're saying. What did this draft call for? It did say that we should triple, that states should triple the financing available to help countries adapt to climate change. So by 2030 from 2025 levels. So in other words, within 5 years, triple the financing.
Yes, that is what we've been asking for. I don't know. I think it's a red line. I don't think it'll get in the final text. But the point I want to make about climate finance is there are so many billions of dollars going into the fossil fuel industry, which is the cause of the climate crisis. If we get that money out of what is causing the climate crisis, we do have the funding available to help us with this transition, this tripling of adaptation finance we're talking about. It's very clear to us. You need to transition away from fossil fuels is the way to get that finance that we are needing.
And where would the finance come from? What
from
countries?
The fossil fuel industry, from the subsidies that are provided. We just see governments giving huge handouts to fossil fuel companies to continue to extend the production pipeline. But in reality, we're seeing the entire world starting to move away. We are seeing the green energy revolution already in place. We are seeing many countries already getting more than half their energy needs from renewable energy. So this is happening. It's just obstinance and vested interests and profit that is keeping the fossil fuel pipeline alive.
Are these COPs worth it? I mean, you have, yes, the largest indigenous population accredited here moving in on 1,000, but you have well over 1,600 fossil fuel lobbyists. What kind of effect does that have? And the fact that just mentioning the F word, what Kumi Naidu called fossil fuels, has been completely nixed in this. Now, Brazilian President Lula says he is going to South Africa to the G20 with this declaration calling for a transition away. This is a large oil-producing nation where we are right now in Brazil. But are these gatherings worth it?
The UNFCCC process is a consensus-based process, and that is the problem with it. The problem is that we have a large number of countries who already know that we have to transition away from fossil fuels, already know that we need that language. We need to respect the scientific consensus of the IPCC. We need to stick to the 1.5 degree goal. But we have a certain number of countries who are vested in the fossil fuel pipeline. I would say not their populations, but certain members of the political classes. And so we're seeing these people blocking progress for the entire humanity. And it's a result of this process that is flawed. So we need to fix the process, and that is something we are looking at as well.
And could you talk about the fact that trade was also mentioned in the draft agreement, saying that in the next 3 climate summits, there will be a discussion of what is that, why is that significant?
That's significant because it's one of the actual mechanisms that countries can hold against other countries to make them take climate action. So it's one of the few kind of binding measures we can use. If, for example, the EU says we won't accept products from countries that have a certain level of emissions, it is actually something that has the effect of a stick rather than just voluntary compliance. And so that's why it's so important, because we are lacking these sticks.
Finally, we have just 30 seconds, but we last spoke to you at The Hague. If you can talk about the International Court of Justice and how climate intersects with human rights and the finding, the transitional, if you will, finding that took place this summer.
This summer, the International Court of Justice handed down their advisory opinion, which basically said states have legal obligations to protect the climate system, which means they have legal obligations to transition away from fossil fuels. States have to control the activities of private actors within their jurisdiction that are contributing to greenhouse gas emissions, which means the fossil fuel companies, and that these obligations apply outside of the UNFCCC process. It's a creation of the entire corpus of international law, including the very foundations of the United Nations. So international cooperation states allowing other states to continue to thrive and their populations to have the rights that are guaranteed under the UN Human Rights Conventions requires states to take legal action on reducing emissions.
We want to thank you so much for being with us. Ralph Regenvanu is Vanuatu's climate minister, one of the islands in the Pacific Ocean, one of the dissenting climate ministers here. Up next, we turn to the indigenous leader, member of the Munduruku community of the Amazon rainforest, a leader of the protest here that shut down the COP last Friday, Alessandra Korap Munduruku. Back in 30 seconds.